Hi, if this is the first time you're listening to the Advisors Assemble podcast, then I think you should listen to a different episode. Episode 194 is a really great introduction to lead generation for financial services. For everyone else, let's crack on. Hello and welcome back to the Advisors Assemble podcast. We've got a very special Business Superhero Series guest because it's Mr. Tom Mapplethorpe. How's it going?
Good morning, mate. Yeah, not bad. How are you?
I'm good. Yeah, about time we got around to letting people know more about you, because you sort of, I imagine some people sort of dive in and they're like, who's Tom?
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, in terms of in and out on the podcast as and when required. So all good.
Oh, good. So if you don't know, Tom is our sort of head of performance, official title, associate director, isn't it?
It is,
which,
yeah, that's right.
It does sound fancy.
It does sound fancy, but yeah, I'd say the performance is the what you do kind of thing.
Yeah, basically, if a client's not performing, they have a go at Tom first, and then me after.
Yeah, that's right. And like the human shield.
Yeah.
That comes first, but yeah. No, it's good. All good.
Nice. Excellent. Cool. Right. So, yeah, we were just saying that you got all the, obviously, we got the questions, and then we were chatting about the facts, which is my favourite bit, which is obviously quite difficult because I've known you for quite some time now. I'm just trying to think, when did I start at Totemic?
Well, I've worked for Lead Engine for 4 years, and then I think Totemic, you must have been two.
Yeah.
Two, maybe three. So getting on to kind of somewhere between six to seven-ish, I'd say.
Yeah. That is a crazy amount of time. Cool. So this will either be, I hope this should be easy, but let's dive in.
We'll see. Because I do have an easy fact that I'm pretty sure you already know. So I had to like lose that because that's like my go-to. So I couldn't use that. So
let's have the go-to on the outside of the three.
Okay. So outside of three, my go-to one was that once Yuri Geller read my mind at a football match.
Do you know what? I sort of half remember that. I would have struggled, but I sort of half remember you telling me that. So what football match was it?
So it was, I think he's still alive. He was like an Exeter, big with Exeter, like
yes,
big Exeter fan, right. or he's involved in some way. And I was at a Lincoln versus Exeter game. And one of my friend's dads, we went with him and he had a kind of like almost like a box kind of thing going on. I must have been about, I don't know, 12 at the time. And I remember like he'd just been on I'm a Celebrity. And so he was like, you know, like kind of like publicly sort of like relevant in that time.
Yeah.
And I sort of like remember looking at him and thinking, oh, wow, I wonder if he'll come and sign an autograph. And I'm like 15 seconds later, he came over and said, oh, hi, guys, do you want an autograph? And I
remember thinking, read your mind.
He's just read
Absolutely.
My mind.
Yeah.
He's looked at me and he's read my mind. Brilliant. I was absolutely convinced. And then we did this whole like in terms of, they said, oh, let's sign them out here. So we went outside the boardroom bit and he signed them outside where like all the people and the cameras were and everything else like that. I didn't really like get it at the time. I remember my friend's dad saying afterwards, said, yo, yeah, funny how he took you out. So like, you know, it's like the PR bit of it, of, you know, him signing the kids' autographs kind of thing.
Love it.
So yeah, that was my obvious. And that's what I mean. I thought even if you had an inkling of it, you'd know that's the one.
Yeah.
You might know the other one, to be fair, but we'll see.
Fantastic. So he either read your mind or is a narcissist.
One of the two.
Love it. Right. Okay, so that's separated, and then we've got the three within the thing. Right, okay. So let's have the first fact/non-fact.
The first fact/non-fact is I completed the Great North Run with next to no training.
I either know that you've done it or I know someone else that's done it. I think I've got a friend that did the London Marathon without training. I'm pretty sure he's hungover as well. Okay, that's my go-to if I'm not sure about the other ones. So I'm going to park that. But yeah, what's the next one?
Number two, I've been airlifted to hospital for a very minor football injury.
I mean, that is plausible. Well, I say plausible, like airlifted for a minor injury. What was the injury?
It was a knee issue.
A knee issue. All right. Okay. All right. What's the third one?
The third one is I equaled the record for the time taken to eat two dry cream crackers when I was 11.
I love how specific that is. That feels that you've spent a little bit of time making that up, but I like it. I have got a feeling that you've mentioned the Great North Run before, so I'm going to go with that.
Incorrect.
Oh, no. Is it the crackers?
Incorrect.
Ah, the football?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, my knee locked out. When I was about 15, 16, my knee locked out, and they didn't know what happened, so they called an ambulance. basically. It was pretty painful. It wasn't like I broke my leg or anything, yeah. But it was really painful. And basically the ambicopter was on its way from Lincoln to Grimsby, and then it got like called off because it turns out it wasn't required anymore. And it was about like 2 minutes away from where we were. So what you got, the operator or whatever redirected it to the playing field. And yeah, in terms of got from, well, for those that probably don't know it, but from fullback to Lincoln, getting there in 4 minutes is an absolute world record.
That is decent.
So yeah, no, that was the one.
Okay. Do you still have problems with the knee?
Yeah, I do, actually. I had an operation on it when I was probably about 21, but only kind of like quite recently, it sort of felt like it's kind of like flared up again. I played a preseason game, well, it must have been like 2 months ago now, and I've sort of like trained a little bit on it and it still doesn't feel great. So yeah, no, still have a bit of an issue with it. Not as bad as it was at the time. The operation sort of did its job, but at the minute it feels a little bit ropey.
I did my knee playing football earlier this year and then did it again. And then it feels like, and then it wasn't feeling right. Like it felt like it needed to click all the time. But now, like, I can feel like as if it's swollen, all the time, which is a bit, oh, it's not too bad at the minute, but it feels like I was doing it yesterday. I was putting my leg straight and you like on the right hand side of the knee, it's like, what is all that? Which is not great. Okay. Well, there we go. Excellent. Well, I enjoyed that because I should have got that correct, but...
Well, that's me. I had to find one that you didn't know. I reckon you would have got the Uri Geller one.
I think I do. Yeah, I do feel like you've definitely told me that one.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, I'm definitely interested into what you think your superpower is, though. And then was it easy to come up with, or...?
It's easy to know, but it's like in terms of articulating it in a concise manner.
Yeah.
It takes a little bit. So, yeah, I mean, I'm not sure if Marvel will be buying the rights on this one just yet. But yeah. I would say my superpower is taking people who are searching for a product or a service and turning them into a customer of someone that we work with.
Okay, that is a good superpower, but it's also like getting a mortgage broker on here and saying, putting people the right mortgage. But I do agree. I thought you were going to go with analysis.
Oh, okay, right, okay. So, yeah, okay, yeah, specifically. I suppose that sort of comes into, like, one of the next questions. But, yeah, analysis, and I suppose in terms of finding solutions from looking at data is probably, yeah, my sort of superpower, if you like. More specifically. Now, I suppose the first one is sort of what I do. But my superpower is probably being able to look at a set of numbers and come out with a solution from it,
That is 100% true. And yeah, I mean, it's great because I remember when I first started and I thought, oh, I'm going to have to do everything myself. I can't possibly get people in. It's been great, great for me. And it's been, what, now four, what did you say, 4 years?
4 years, yeah.
Mental, isn't it? So we used to, when we, because I remember we kept meeting at, was it OK Diner?
We met all sorts of places. So you used to come in the office one day a week and then kind of like Lead Engine got bigger so you couldn't have a day out of the office because you're like a contractor. And then we sort of met this like random, like a service station, was it?
It was like a
meeting place on the A1. And that's what it was. It was just like a meeting room that you could get like a coffee and things like that. But it wasn't even like a cafe. You sort of paid your money to go in and
unlimited coffee, didn't you? Yeah, it was a bit
So we sort of went there, but they had Wi-Fi and stuff and it was comfortable and, you know, it was quiet. So we used to go there. And then I think we moved further down south, down the A1 to the OK Diner, because we could get a decent bit of food.
Yeah.
And I think it was like more convenient for you, I think, at the time, because you didn't have to travel as far. So yeah, that's right. OK Diner on the A1, we'd meet about once a week.
Absolutely. And then like how it makes the world a better place, it'll be if you've got some clients who are like, we've been working with for years and have grown their business, I imagine they would, you know, I think when Tessa asked me the same thing, it was kind of like, I think, well, I'm answering the question for you, which is rude. I always think because our sort of mission of being like, we want people to find an advisor rather than a lead gen person that's going to sell them. I just feel like we're helping that person get the right advice by getting in front of good people. Do you kind of see it as the same
way? That is exactly what I put. So I exactly wrote down, it pairs consumers with good advisors and helps small to medium-sized businesses grow.
Yeah.
Because it's kind of like on both sides. And so, you know, you could do this job in like a big, big company, but then you're sort of just like a cog. Do you know what I mean? In terms of, you sort of have your impact or whatever, but the impact's greater working with a number of sort of like small to medium-sized firms.
Yeah.
They help to kind of, you know, grow, increase their revenue that way. And also at the same time, you're providing a good service for the people that are actually searching for what they do.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Keeping away from kind of like dodgier sites or lead gen sites where, you know, they put the details in and they get contacted by six or seven brokers or something. Yeah. You know, it's a bad experience. We're basically giving the consumers a good experience. So yeah, it's kind of, it's when it works well, it's great on both ends.
Absolutely. And then this is interesting, like the origin story. Tell me when you first started to discover the superpower, because you were doing like a lot of marketing stuff for like Totemic before we met, right?
Yeah, that's right. I started out, so I was always interested in kind of like the commercial side of business, so like right from school. Mm-hmm. But I was more interested in things like investments and like payback periods. Like if you bought something from a factory, how long would it take for the efficiency to pay that back? The problem was I was like rubbish at mental maths. So like a career in accounting was never gonna come. But I enjoyed the creative side of marketing. So it's kind of like the sort of performance marketing we do, kind of like meets in the middle. You've kind of got that analysis side that's great, but it's also the marketing element, which we enjoy. But yeah, that's right. So I started out at Totemic. It was more kind of like brand marketing, which I enjoyed. And I sort of like, in terms of learning a lot from it, but I could never really get on board with, not the lack of commerciality. Well, yeah, actually it was the lack of commerciality that goes with it. Yeah. In terms of, you know, like, you know, you'd have a room full of people talking about, you know, whether there should be the spacing between the letters on the logo and should you use the word help or should you use the word advice and things like that. And you saw that thing like, is this worth it? When you think about the time it's taking, the salary per hour spend of people in this meeting, is it actually going to make a blind bit of difference or is it just people making work? And so I sort of like, you know, I learned a lot from it, but it just wasn't really a natural fit. And then I sort of moved into kind of like lead acquisition and lead buying. I was like buying data for various campaigns for the group that we worked with. And then that kind of sort of fell into, right, oh, actually, we should probably be generating our own leads. Yeah, Tom, can you sort this out? And that's sort of why, and that's how I ended up hiring you. Because I didn't really know much about kind of like the PPC side of it. And then I had to learn kind of like the sort of like the SEO side of it kind of on the job. And sort of like try and learn it sort of like pretty quickly. But yeah, that was basically it. So I've gone kind of on a rounded sort of marketing journey from the non-commercial side to the commercial side. But I definitely much prefer the kind of commercial side of it. It's actually, yeah, when we get back to down to sort of like kryptonite, then it is very much the non-commercial side. But yeah, that's the origin story.
I struggled in a corporate environment. I did like a contract thing at Thomas Cook. Mm-hmm. And you were like, because they had some sub-brands and stuff and we were working on some rebrands and stuff. And it was like, the brief was like, right, well, Julie, who's in charge, so not the customer, Julie, the person who's in charge, we would like putting it together for her. So she would sign it off because she likes X, Y, and Z rather than what the customer likes or any data.
Yeah, that's right. And that's right. Like,
oh, just, I got a decent offer from Thomas Cook to like head up a team there. I mean, it's good I didn't take it because they sort of closed and then reopened, but
That is 100% it. I actually forgot about that kind of thing. Not that we worked together at Thomas Cook, but the same scenarios where you would work to get something for what's signed off rather than what's right. And I remember sort of like putting something together and saying, you know, oh, X, exactly as you just said, X person won't like that. Yeah. It's like, well, that doesn't mean to say it's wrong.
Yeah, no, yeah.
I've got a lot of justification why it's right.
Yeah.
In terms of numbers, analysis on why we should do it this way. And they said, yeah, no, they just won't like it. And then that actually comes down to a bit further on about kind of like emotional decisions and logical decisions. I was like, oh, right, okay. So you just end up, and it does become like a really kind of like demoralizing thing. Just you find yourself constantly doing work you know isn't the best.
Yeah.
Because you're working to please somebody else rather than what's going to work. And then you get it in the net because it hasn't worked.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like, it's lose-lose, really. Yeah. So yeah, that kind of corporate side of it is a bit of a headache. And you forget about it, actually. Yeah. In terms of, I'd sort of forgotten about that sort of side of it, actually. So yeah, no, it's funny looking back now.
And then it is, I suppose it's like when we've got clients now, it's their, or they're just concerned about results. So then it's, and often, not about the detail. We do get some, don't we? And they're the more difficult ones where they want something to look a certain way because that's what they like rather than the customer. And then often we'll be like, okay, well, we recommend this, but we'll do what you've said. Then it doesn't work, but then at least we can flip back. Then
yeah,
like,
that's
oh,
right.
Okay, well, what can we change? We're like, well, you know what we pitched at the beginning? Should we try that? And then
yeah, that's right. So sometimes people just need to see the data. Yeah. And it goes back to that kind of like that sort of arguing with like an emotional decision. If someone doesn't like it, sometimes they just don't like it, but they can't really say why, but they just have that feeling of not liking it. All the logic that you can sort of put forward isn't necessarily going to make much difference because they just have this emotional resistance to it. So sometimes you've got to like let it play out. Say, okay, fine, we'll change it. but we'll look at the data, we'll come at the end of it and then compare. And then normally the data tells the story sort of we expected it to. But you've just got to go through the pain of getting there, to be honest. Yeah. And it's all like, you know, the waste of time, I suppose. But yeah, no, you do get it. And sometimes, you know, in terms of our websites are kind of set up for performance, you know, in terms of that, and we don't necessarily contest that, you know, there are instances where a website could look better from a design point of view, from aesthetics, but it will perform worse. And this is a performance exercise. So we always champion the performance over everything else. But which does often come at the cost of like design and aesthetics sometimes, which is sometimes a challenge, but we just for us to manage it. And like I say, the data always tells a story.
Yeah, absolutely. We've got we had an inquiry recently where someone just wants a new website and they just want it to look great, and they don't need any leads or anything. They just want this website, not bother about content or anything. They want to use all the pre-approved content from the network, etc. So not interested in SEO or anything. I'm just not excited by it.
Yeah.
We can do it. We've got really good designers. We could make something look really cool. But I don't care like that something is there to look cool. It just doesn't kind of, I don't see the point. Because all you're doing is having first impressions, and then it's like style over substance, isn't it? I just find.
And also for us operationally, it's sort of a bit more difficult to work with. So we have like a, you know, a web page kind of formula that works pretty well. And, you know, the vast majority of people we work with trust us that's going to perform well in terms of, you know,
that's they why may they sometimes hire us.
Think,
yeah,
that's right. They may sometimes think, oh, it could look better. But, you know, if these guys think that it'll perform well, then that's fine. Whereas then you do have the odd other ones where they're much more concerned about the aesthetics of it. Mm. And then what you end up is with this huge kind of like back and forth. Because what we tend to do, we sort of send them the branding, said, yeah, great. We send them the website layout. They think, yeah, great. A few little tweaks here and there, but otherwise fine. Gets built, and it's a really efficient way of getting a website built. Whereas when you sort of like fall into this thing of, here's this, oh, can we change this? Can we change that? Can we change this?
Yeah.
It's a bit like plumbing, because then once you change something, it sort of makes something else look slightly different. Said, oh, now can we change that? In terms of, you know, you patch up one pipe and another spring somewhere else, and you just end up in this kind of like flow, and it's just the delay of it and keeping track of it and everything else. Operationally, it's harder to build, or certainly from the way we're set up, for us to build kind of aesthetic websites than it is for us to build performance ones.
I think it's the same for like loads of you know, business owners that I speak to. The thought of doing a new website fills them with dread, because they had such an awful time doing the first one that dragged on and on and on. It's normally because of amends. And then the designer just gives up on giving their advice and just starts like just doing the amends and doesn't have time to think about you know, stuff. So cool. Okay, so this will be interesting. Who have been your guides? How did they help you? And I think you know, I sort of love to hear unsung heroes, non-famous people, so you can't include me who maybe you worked with. I'm gonna hazard a guess at one.
All right,
and I think your dad might be one of these.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, he is. I've been sort of fortunate enough to actually work closely with my dad, actually, in terms of when we were at Totemic. He actually sort of ran one of the lending divisions there. And it was part of my job, in terms of after I sort of like, in terms of moved from the branding to the performance thing, was to drive the leads for that job. So it's quite good in terms of being able to sort of like have that kind of relationship with your dad, where obviously he's your dad on, you know, at home kind of thing. So you have that other side. But also, you know, in terms of it's nice to have somebody at work that you can trust absolutely 100%, particularly in like a corporate environment where, you know, there's always the odd snake in the grass and things like that. But it's always in terms of, you know, some of the advice or, you know, conversations you sort of have, and you sort of think, is this loaded with something else?
I'm not totally
sure on your motives and things like that. Where it was actually really good just to have somebody that would give you just advice that is purely in your best interest.
Yeah.
You know, and as a father now, you know, you sort of understand that, you know, he perhaps sometimes to the detriment of his own.
Yeah.
He still had his job to do, obviously, but it was actually pretty good to have that sort of like one person there in quite a senior position that sort of has a bit of an overview of everything and you know, give you kind of like the direct or some of the directions on, you know, the things you maybe should or shouldn't be looking at. So yeah, very, very fortunate to be sort of like in that position. I know some people that kind of like work with their families and it sort of all sort of like falls out, but for me, for that, it was really, really good. And that's what I mean, just to have that confidence of the advice you're getting is definitely in your best interest was excellent. So yeah, no, that was one I had written down, but yeah, good one, man.
Oh yeah, nice, that's cool. So who else have we got?
So I've got a few kind of like, again, so like at Totemo, I always think about that time when I sort of got kind of dropped into the lead generation side of it from sort of, you know, buying data to generating your own leads is quite a big sort of drop. Whereas I had a couple of colleagues and also friends there as well, who you know as well. Ah. So I've got friends like, you know, like Matt Brown.
Again, Bembo and Brownie.
Kind of Bembo in terms of Pete or Ryan, mm-hmm. who we sort of like know and are friends with. But in terms of, I sort of, you know, in terms of, because I was sort of being dropped into it, there were instances where I didn't really know where to turn, what to look at. And kind of, you know, they pointed me in the directions that must have saved me weeks, if not months. And without that kind of direction, everything would have happened so much slower. Mm. And I would have learned so much slower. So to have them kind of, you know, in terms of pointing the right things with from design and CRO to PPC and SEO, you know, they're busy with their own stuff, obviously, their own jobs within the company. But in terms of, you know, the time out, sort of say, oh, you want to check this, you want to check that, do this, do that kind of thing. Yeah, must have saved me so much time. And I'm always grateful kind of thinking back that sort of, you know, did help me because I was sort of like thrown in a bit of the deep end.
Yeah.
But they certainly helped me swim a lot faster. So yeah, always sort of grateful for that. And yeah, and obviously I did have you written down.
Yeah, well.
But partly because, you know, in terms of you're very much a guide in the sense that I, to the point where I had to hire you.
Yeah.
So, but in terms of on the paid media side, as I say, I obviously initially hired you at Totemic to do that. So I didn't really have to do it myself. But what I learned from it and the experience that sort of you had and everything else like that, yeah, in terms of it was really, really sort of invaluable. And obviously it sort of helps. It was quite good because it sort of helps me do my job that I do for you now.
Yeah.
So yeah, they were kind of like the three or four that I sort of had in mind. But yeah, it was all sort of came at kind of like the same time as well.
Which is quite
interesting. All sort of within the same sort of, you know, I've been working for 11 years, but it all sort of happened within the same kind of like kind of six months to two year period. These sort of like all this kind of value sort of came through, I think, really. And then it kind of did set me on the course that I'm on now in terms of, because it was a bit of a course sort of change from brand marketing and lead purchasing to generating your own leads. Is quite a big switch. So yeah, no, always grateful for it.
Absolutely. Nice. Cool. So your kryptonite then, you sort of touched on it earlier, things that annoy you, distract you, stop you from working, achieving goals and things.
Yeah, it's broadly summed up as a bad use of time. In terms of, and also I had to change it in terms of, in the sense that I sort of initially sort of in my mind, in terms of when people, I sort of in my mind, the first thing I thought of was, when people are having to do what people want to do, what other people want to do, but it's wrong.
Yeah.
So, well, no, it's not wrong. It's a difference in opinion.
Yeah.
Is what it is. And it's kind of recognizing that. And it's kind of, it's spending our time on things like the non-commercial side of marketing.
Mm.
And then even some things sort of like we do or we get asked to do and things like that. It's not that it's not effective. It's just not the most effective use of our time.
Yeah.
Is the difference. So I sort of said about, you know, in terms of things like, in a previous job, you know, looking over, will the word help or advice be better? You know, in terms of, you know, it's actually a good sort of CRO test to go through and test these things, and that's fine. But in terms of the data that we look at per client, it's not a good use of our time to sort of do that. We're better off doing bigger things. If you're a big corporation, you would have somebody that looks at that, and because it would eventually be effective, but it's just not an effective use of our time. For the level on the, you know, the higher level that we tend to work with our clients on. So that's it. It's getting dragged into or caught up in just like the non-commercial side. Because emotionally on my end, I just sort of sit and say, this doesn't matter. It's not going to make a difference.
Yeah,
and you're not motivated to do it. You're motivated to do everything else that kind of drives the commercial results, you know, the motivation, and on the other side, the satisfaction is absolutely through the roof. Whereas for this side, you sort of just like, you think, like, oh, you know, it's something where you get that is non-commercial and you sort of think, it doesn't matter. It isn't going to make a difference. But you can't really say that because it's someone's sort of emotional opinion on something. So you've got to kind of just sort of think, okay, right. And you've either got to either one, do it, or B, find a better solution. And that is just part of the job. But yeah, it's that kind of getting dragged in on non-commercial marketing that starts to have an effect or a detriment on the commercial side.
Yeah,
of the
exactly.
That's the kind of the kryptonite of it. And that's the it's everything. It's annoying, it's distracting, and it stops us from achieving our goals.
Yeah.
So it ticks all the boxes.
Yeah.
But it is that. It's that kind of, not sort of in terms of, that kind of eyes sort of off the prize of, you know, it's all, everything's got to be commercial.
Yeah.
And also, you know, being proportionate with it. So, you know, if we think, all right, we had a really good month with a certain client for leads, but if then unhappy about, I don't know, a social image or something that's gone through, I would see that as like, you know, 98% great, 2% problem. Whereas there are other people that, you know, may think that's, you know, like a, okay, 60% great, 40% problem. And I was like, well, that's not at all proportionate. But it just comes down to people's perceptions. And I think a lot of people we work with do get the kind of like the commercial side of it. And, but yeah, it's just sort of that kind of, losing time on the non-commercial stuff. That takes away from achieving the commercial stuff that we want to do.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think sometimes we are quite good at saying that, but like sometimes you don't want to bruise an ego if someone's got a really good idea. And a lot of the time, we've tried a lot of things before as well, so we can say we have, but when we tried it before, it didn't work as well. Mm. So sometimes you can get around it, but yeah, sometimes it's...
That's the thing in terms of... That is a good point, because also a lot of the ideas aren't at all bad ideas. Mm. In terms of a lot of them are actually reasonable ideas. And we can always say, yeah, we can test it, and then the data will tell the story, which I'm actually always more than happy to do. Always happy. Mm. Always, always happy to be wrong.
Yeah, exactly. Happy to be proved wrong.
Always happy to be proved wrong, because that's how we learn. Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, we do have instances where we sort of, you know, put something on, we think, not convinced this is going to work, but it does actually work better than we expected to. And that's us, you know, us learning as we sort of go on. We know what works, but we always have to kind of like test new things.
Yeah.
Otherwise we're just standing still. So with that will come an element of failure. And also, you know, in terms of trying things that sort of other people suggest, and we think, okay, yeah, let's do it, let's run it, we'll see what the data comes back as, and then we'll go from there. So more than happy to do that. But we do have obviously a lot of data, and there are some instances where someone will suggest something, they look, we've tried this 100 times. Mm-hmm. We just don't think this is going to work. Or not, we obviously wouldn't try something 100 times, it not working. We tried it five or 10 times and look.
Yeah.
It's just, this is the problem. This is the reason why it won't work. Whether it's a specific PPC campaign, we'll just say, look, the traffic just doesn't convert. We typically always use the one in terms of people say, oh, can we, you know, do something on mortgage rates? Problem is, the people that search for a mortgage rate don't really turn into leads. In terms of, you know, you could spend tens of thousands of pounds testing it to find a way where it does turn into leads, but no one wants to spend 10 to 20,000 pounds or more, or how much it costs to find out. Is the problem. So we need to make what we do work commercially from the off. So, you know, bigger firms that have like more of a bottomless pit of money could run a series of tests on things that we typically wouldn't run, because we know it's just going to take too long to work out if something will work or not. Yeah, there are rarely any bad ideas, but it's
absolutely
it comes back to that effective use of time and money, I think.
Yeah. And mortgage rates, for example, would work for like Money Supermarket if they were giving a load of mortgage rates, but we work with advisors who want to give advice, and someone looking for a rate wants a rate, not advice. They just want to find the cheapest rate. So that's why it doesn't work. And I think, yeah, when you're logical about it, I think most people understand.
Oh yeah, that's right. That's right. It's very, very rare. I actually can't think of actually a single time we've done it where we've put something live that we don't think is going to work. Yeah. We've never done it. We've put something live that we'll be interested to see if it works.
Yes.
Which is slightly different in terms of where we think, okay, don't know, it might work, but let's do a small test and see. Whereas, yeah, in terms of if sort of, you know, if there's something we've ran, we've found out it doesn't work, and we have a logical reason why it doesn't work, then we wouldn't just run that again. We'd just sort of say, look, it's genuinely not worth the time or money doing it. And, you know, nobody really wants to waste time or money. So they tend to go with it.
Exactly. Oh, I'm interested in if you have any cool gadgets, software or something technical, or an app or something.
So I was sort of thinking about this, and it's kind of the kind of software, I sort of think the apps that we sort of use, and the one that I think we've talked about it before, that I actually find myself using kind of like on my phone if I'm just checking something for kind of like work or whatever, and it is often Airtable.
Oh, mate.
Because it just does everything. And I can use it for project management. We use it for lead quality checking. We use it for lead volumes. I've always looking at kind of like Google Analytics, and like SEMrush is a really good tool for working out keyword, doing keyword research, working out cost per clicks, competitive insights. That's actually really good. I mean, it costs about, I think the cheapest package, maybe $100 quid a month or $100 a month or something like that. So it's not cheap. Mm-hmm. It's an amazing piece of software, SEMrush. It sort of does so much and gives you so much information, makes our lives easier as kind of, you know, performance marketing professionals. But in terms of one, I would sort of say that does so much is Airtable. It's an app on the phone. It's a web app on the computer. So not that sort of necessarily matters so much, but in terms of just its capability, it will connect anything with anything. Almost. So if you're looking for like an automation or looking for, you know, your systems to do something a little bit smarter, I think there's a good chance that Airtable could do it. The problem is, in terms of obviously, you obviously do most of our Airtable stuff, so you know your way around it, or sometimes, you know, we have a kind of like a software engineer that checks it out. But, you know, with kind of like, again, with enough time and inclination, I think people could work their way around it.
Yeah, that's it.
It sounds quite broad, but you could set up, you know, like I think in terms of set up things like social media posters.
Yeah,
you can set up email automations. You can use it as project management tools. I think part of the difficulty in describing it is because it does everything, which makes it sound vague. But if you sort of think, oh, it would be good if, I don't know, my leads went from my website into my CRM system and then into a database that automatically emails them. Yeah, Airtable will do that.
Yeah.
And it is just, I just find myself, that's the one I find myself on. I should have done like a screen, that iPhone thing that sort of says, you know, what app are you on the most?
Yeah, yeah.
And it told me, but yeah, as I would say, Airtable, SEMrush is great for us, or anyone looking to sort of, you know, do more with their SEO. You can track your progress. You can find new keyword ideas. You can, you know, check to see what your competitors are doing. How well do they rank? How much traffic do they sort of potentially see? That's really, really invaluable for us. But it does come as a cost, and it is very, very relevant for us as performance marketers. It's one of those things, it's kind of like people always find the information like, oh, really interesting. When we're on a call and we're doing keyword research with clients, they tend to actually really enjoy it. It's like, oh, it'll be interesting to see how many people search for X, Y, and Z.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it is quite good, and it is interesting, and that's how you find new opportunities in the market. But yeah, it's just a bit pricey if you're not going to use it regularly in the same sort of way we do. But they're the main two, I'd say, that I find useful, as well as things like that kind of go absolutely without saying, things like Google Analytics and Google Search Console. But they're sort of, yeah, in terms of pretty sort of like vanilla, and I think you'd expect people to use them. Yeah. Whereas things like Airtable and SEMrush are certainly the kind of more, not so much out there, but different ones you may not have heard about.
Yeah, I love Airtable, and it's cheap as well. It's per user price. And we're starting to use like lead distribution.
Yeah.
Like on a round robin basis.
Great example. Forgot about that. Yeah.
But also we've got a client that wants advisors to see what's in the queue, but not all the details of the lead, just a kind of snippet of it, how long they've been in the queue, and then to be able to assign themselves the oldest or the newest, but an administrator being able to start manually assign any, one that wants auto-assigned based on postcode. It can do what you basically, if you've got a problem, you can create the solution with Airtable. I think that's kind of the best way of doing it. It's like a spreadsheet on steroids with automation in it.
Is that the official thing? Because if it's not, it should be.
It should be. It should be. I'm going to speak to them. I should get a job in marketing. And then the end, like you said, the social media post generator. It's because it's data, because like colors are data. Like a color has got a thing called a hex code. It's numbers. So you store that color number, and then you can hook it up to this other thing that if you give it the right color and template and everything, it will create these images for you. And it's like powered by Airtable.
Yeah.
And then it will give you like graphs and reports and things like that based on the data that you give it. And that's why we like the feedback on it and the feedback, a lead feedback system. Yeah.
We probably should have asked them to sponsor this before we did it.
We should have done. Yeah. We should have done. Or we should get some sort of affiliate link.
Yeah.
But I do worry. A business owner on their own with so much to do would just open up and be like, this is a spreadsheet, I don't understand, and not have enough time to get it to work. But
yeah, I suppose that's it's the sort of need.
It's probably for geeks like me to make tools to then for other people to use, really, is probably who it's designed for. Cool. Okay. So, are you a reader? Do you read much? I mean, we had a client ask us if we've read like a Seth Godin book. We were both like, no, not. But I don't know if you read much.
Yeah, I do. I'd say I read a bit. I audiobook a fair bit, if that's what counts. But I sort of like, I like reading novels and listening to kind of nonfiction. But yeah, I do have a few books that I sort of think that kind of, you know, have sort of like had quite an impact one way or another. I think there were sort of three that I kind of highlighted. But yeah, no, I do enjoy reading. But I mean, like, it's funny, like in terms of like reading marketing books, I probably should.
Yeah.
But I don't. I sort of go on kind of like our experiences and the data we see. I read sort of like things like blogs and articles and things like that, and maybe listen to like podcasts on things like that. But I don't necessarily read books on things like marketing. I don't know if it sometimes feels like a bit of a busman's holiday, which it won't be, because, you know, it's not to pretend that we know everything. So probably should. But I feel like I just get that kind of marketing information from elsewhere rather than almost like a, you know, than a hard book or audio book. I feel we sort of get it from kind of, you know, sort of like kind of like the online journals that sort of, you know, come up and things like that, or finding solutions to the problems we need. But to answer your question, I am a bit of a reader.
Cool. And what were the ones that you'd highlighted?
So I had, three. So one we might have spoken about on the podcast before. I don't know, you've read it. Never Split the Difference by Chris Voss.
Yeah, yeah.
He's the FBI or former FBI chief hostage negotiator. And it's kind of all about kind of like negotiating your way through life and things like that. But I think it gives you kind of practical stuff, which I never use.
Yeah, same.
Because I just pay the asking price. Oh, you've already put the service charge on, have you? Yeah, no, that's totally fine. but what it really, like, in terms of what kind of really shone through was that, in terms of that difference between trying to argue with someone that has like an emotional issue with something and trying to counter it with logic.
Yeah.
In terms of, if someone has an emotional issue, you could speak to them about the logical reasons why you can help or why it's right. for days or until they're blue in the face, but it's just not going to resonate.
Yeah.
And in terms of, I use that kind of, I'm not actively use it, but I'm aware of it, kind of whether at work or in personal relationships or day-to-day, you know, encounters kind of thing. Understanding if someone has an emotional consideration on a certain thing, then just spouting logic at them on why it's good or why it's not good just isn't the way to go. It's that quote, that point of kind of like asking questions and helping someone come to their own sort of realization with it. I've really kind of like taken that away. And I do genuinely have like an awareness of that over what we sort of do. So yeah, I sort of find I don't really, because I would have used to, I used to do it beforehand. If someone sort of said, I remember like when me and my wife was kind of like house hunting and she just sort of like didn't want to live in a certain place or village or whatever. Mm-hmm. But I'd sort of like give her the logical reasons why. And it just like bounced back. And she's just like, yeah, no, I just don't want to live there. But it's great transport links, and it's near the schools, and it's near the town, and everything else like that. But she just didn't want to live there. Do you know what I mean? And so, like, you know, the logical argument, I could have spoken for about a year on it why it was logically a good place to go, and it wouldn't have made a difference. So yeah, having that awareness, I've really, really sort of strong. I've really enjoyed that. So that was good. The second one, it's a little bit heavier. So it's called, I don't know if you've read it, called Prisoners of Geography.
No.
By a guy called Tim Marshall. So it's about like things like geopolitics. And it's basically around like why certain countries or regions behave the way they do, but based on quite literally where they sit on the globe, like where they sit in relation to other countries, physical barriers like mountains or rivers or their proximity to the sea and things like that. So it is a little bit heavy, but it's actually, I imagine he sold quite a few copies recently because there's a fair bit about like Russia being one of them. But then it goes into the UK, USA, China, you know, African countries and things like that. Why, you know, in terms of why the world is the way it is. And it is based on kind of like geography of it. And in terms of, so whilst you've kind of got, all right, those kind of specific scenarios going on, it gives a really good perspective of the value or the importance in understanding why people behave the way they do. Because if you don't do that, you look at someone who sort of like behaves or in terms of, yeah, not necessarily going into the country's element of it, but someone that behaves a bit odd, you may just think that's odd, but it just shows the importance of getting behind why they think that way. And then you can act accordingly. Otherwise, you're just sort of, you know, almost like fishing in the dark a little bit. So I found that really, really interesting, really, really useful. Mm. It's interesting generally on kind of like the global politics side, or I found it interesting. But I also like geography as well. But in terms of that element of whilst, you know, if you understand the motives, it doesn't mean say you have to agree with it, but you understand why they think it's right. So it's, yeah, really, really sort of interesting in terms of, I say, not just on the countryside, but in terms of people, day-to-day, work, personal relationships and things like that. It was something that always sort of, you know, kind of hold with me a bit. It's like, well, yeah, they are acting a little bit. I don't really understand why they're doing that. There must be more to it rather than just, I don't get why they're acting that way, done. Do you know what I mean? In terms of it's asking the right questions then of finding out what the motives are. So yeah, really good. Really enjoyed that. And there's a sequel to it too, Power of Geography, which is basically much the same, but goes into more countries basically. But so I enjoyed that.
Cool.
And the last one is actually Gary Neville's autobiography, which is called Red.
Yeah.
So I read that when I was finishing uni about sort of 2000, 2011, 2012. I think that's around about it came out. So it's kind of like a bit of a funny time when you're finishing uni. You're sort of, you know, not 100% sure, you know, what real life is going to hold, what sort of comes next. But I really, really enjoyed it. And it really put into kind of like real terms what kind of like the power of hard work and application can achieve. So a lot of it's about, you know, Gary Neville was in that kind of Man United class of 92 with, you know, people like David Beckham, Ryan Giggs, Paul Scholes. And kind of, you know, as kind of like youth players or younger professional players, they had tons and tons of natural ability, which Gary Neville didn't.
Mm.
So his was all down to, you know, his success was all down to kind of like grit, hard work, application, sacrifice. And when you see it at that level in terms of, you know, he had to work harder, adapt more, you know, he had to change his position. He was originally a centre half, I think.
Yeah,
he had to move out to a right back. When you're working or playing alongside far more gifted peers than you, and you look at the end result in that his achievements match those who had the abundance of natural talent. You know, I think he's, you know, he's as just as decorated or, you know, not far off people like Paul Scholes, Ryan Giggs. And, you know, in terms of the appearances made and things like that, he is, you know, one of the most decorated, certainly domestic footballers in the world. And it came through from sheer will, drive and application, but at the absolute highest level where talent often shines through. So yeah, I've sort of found it really, really kind of compelling, particularly at the time that I read it. Sort of, you know, quite a bit of a transitional period in your life. So yeah, that was the other one I really, really enjoyed.
Yeah, nice. So, yeah, nice. Good. I think people underestimate the amount of work like people like Cristiano Ronaldo do to get to where it's like a lot of people saying he wasn't naturally gifted, but just it was a solid work. And like David Beckham, the amount of free kicks that he practiced to get as good. It wasn't like naturally good. I think, you know, yeah. It's a good lesson. Very good lesson.
Cool. Well, I'm just a bit scared to answer this question in case there's any surprises. But normally I ask, what does the future hold?
Well, I sort of think it depends if Marvel are going to buy the rights to my origin story. They'll probably retire in a year or two. But if they're not, I think it's almost in terms of really a case of, what I enjoy about digital marketing is it's constantly changing.
Yeah.
I sort of think like in terms of you sort of, I don't always really look, you know, 5-10 years ahead or anything like that, because I look at what we were doing 2 years ago.
Yeah.
Or maybe a bit longer, maybe 2 or 3 years ago. And it's very different to what we do now. So, you know, it's hard to predict. It's constantly changing. There's a constant drive to, you know, find new ways to market effectively, think outside the box, you know, make marketing more sustainable at kind of the highest level, you know, forgetting about, you know, the absolute intricacies of what we go into. It's really, it's kind of like the excitement of not just kind of moving with the tide, but trying to get ahead of it.
Yeah.
You know, in terms of what are we doing? How do we generate enough time in the day to be able to, you know, service the clients we have, but then also work on our product so that it becomes better as the markets constantly change, as the digital marketing industry constantly changes. So it's kind of sort of trying to beat the wave is what I find sort of, you know, pretty exciting with it, really. You know, you don't just want to float with it in terms of, otherwise, if you do, you're probably just going to end up getting left behind.
Yeah, yeah.
It's that kind of, you know, driving to stay forward and it's constant. That's what I mean. It's not something that's going to happen in 5 years, it's going to happen in 10 years. It's constantly happening, which is something that's always quite exciting, really. And yeah, I think that's sort of the way I always see the future, really. You know, I never really look more than 2 minutes in front of my face. But until, you know, I don't know what I'm having for tea tonight until sort of 5 o'clock. In terms of that general kind of constant drive for better performance, finding new ways of doing what we do, making our product better.
Yeah.
Is really, I think, what the future always sort of holds, really. So, yeah. And it's, as I say, always exciting.
Nice. Yeah. Good answer. I'm not there. I think I might leave the career and go to something else and give me a heart attack. So that is good. Cool. Well, I enjoyed that. When we are recording a further episode, which will be the following week's episode today as well, back talking about marketing and stuff and websites and stuff. But I think there'll be a lot of people that'll be interested by your origin story and everything. So appreciate that, mate. That was really good.
Yeah, no worries. Thanks for having me on.
I will see you next time.
See you later.